Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the third episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast micro, or GameBuoy Micro for short, your occasional parfait of left-of-center gaming news nibbles and view vittles that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. You know, except for this week, because, like, hello, super popular game alert. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as ever and always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is August 30th, and we're going to be taking about, 45 minutes or so of your day to talk about an episode we lovingly refer to as Kingdom Hearts Primer Prime Years Over 10.
Okay.
This week we're going to use the micro format a little different than we have previously. I've really wanted to do a Kingdom Hearts episode for a really long time, but Slagkick here, he hasn't played the game, so that wasn't a good fit. But you know what? I'm super stubborn, and we're doing one anyway, and I figure we're gonna get around it by just, sort of laying out what you need to know to get into this series. You know, it's like a whole meme that, like, Kingdom Hearts is super complex and overblown, and it's on all of these different consoles, and there's no way one person could reasonably catch up at this point. And, to that, I say rubbish.
Well, this is the perfect time to catch up, really.
Well, yeah, with HD Remix out in, just another week or two. Some people, now that Kingdom Hearts 3 have been announced, maybe you're just going to want to sort of have a little quick refresher.
Or, maybe need ideas for fan fiction.
Oh, girl, that's all you.
Girl, I've read your Organization 13 fic before.
That is not a thing that exists, but after tonight, maybe it will be.
Lies.
Yeah, so we're going to be going spoiler-free here tonight, more or less. Anything that's sort of in the realm of on the back of the box, so to speak, is fair game. This means, of course, that when we talk about Kingdom Hearts 2, we will talk about characters that are in it. You could probably, from that, infer who does get through the events of Kingdom Hearts 1. And with regard to that, I don't think there's anything we could do. So super, super, super minor spoilers alert. But again, we're definitely not going to talk about any of the big reveals, any of the big secrets or twists.
So you're saying that Sora doesn't die then?
Well, I mean, Sora has been in every game so far. So, I mean, you could infer from that. I wouldn't call that a spoiler, though. I mean, I guess maybe. This whole episode is doomed to fail.
It'd be funny if the secret is actually that he is dead.
Okay, well, with this idiocy aside, let's get down to brass tacks. Slagkick, do you want to set us up for sort of this first game here?
Can we take a minute to talk about how Kingdom Hearts came to be? Because I think that's a cute story.
Didn't we just talk about it like 2 days ago on our Disney episode?
Yeah, but maybe people haven't listened to that yet, which they really should, because it's really magical and fun.
Also, Kingdom Hearts, Disney, so they should just listen to that episode. The long and the short of it is that, Shinji Hashimoto-san from, Squaresoft at the time, Square Enix now, and he is still with Square Enix, was on an elevator with a unnamed Disney executive, on an elevator sharing space.
It was Walt Disney's frozen head.
That would be incredible. I hope that is a true fact. but they were on this elevator together. They started talking to each other, about their work. They both offices were located in the same building. And, one thing led to another. I guess Hashimoto-san, Hironobu Sakaguchi-san, and Nomura-san had previously had a discussion about how this was sort of a dream project that they'd love to do. Just pie-in-the-skying it. Hashimoto-san actually said it to the Disney executive, and, sort of the rest is history, as they say. They went with it, and what we have now is a series with, like 7 or 8 games in it over the last 10 years that is well-loved by many and has sold millions and millions of copies.
Magical!
Yes, magical is an appropriate way to describe that. So why don't you, using these notes that I gave you, set us up to this first game?
So, back in 2002, should this be called Prime Years Over 11? Back in 2002, a game for a little-known console called the PlayStation 2...
Girl!
...came out called Kingdom Hearts. And it was kind of a big deal at the time because I was like, wow, these are Disney characters with Final Fantasy characters. No one ever thought that would be a thing.
Yeah, you know, in fact, I imported this game when it came out in Japan, March 28th, 2002. I imported it right off. I and a lot of other, people that would import back then, we didn't think this game was going to come to the U.S. Like, this is one of those things where, you know, there's a lot of crossover games that come out in Japan, and because of licensing issues, they never
cross the pond. It's like, just Squaresoft doing something weird again.
Yeah, well, exactly so. So this was a big deal. I know a lot of us imported this game. It ended up getting announced for a U.S. release, and it's funny, because they actually went, like, the all-star voice talent route initially with, like, Lance Bass.
Mandy Moore,
David Boreanaz, all doing voices for this game. So that's,
my favorite was, Christy Carlson Romano, the voice of Kim Possible, as, Yuffie.
Really? I didn't know that.
No,
I don't know who that person is. I like Kim Possible, and I still didn't know who that person was.
It's the voice of Kim Possible.
Well, yes, I mean, I get that now because you just said it 20 seconds ago. But heretofore, I did not.
Who was Mandy Moore? Wasn't she...
Was she Eris?
Was she Eris?
I think so.
David Boreanaz, was he Cloud?
I think so.
Ah, it's so fitting, though.
Do you know who, Oh, he might have been Squall, though.
Also fitting. And I know what you're going to ask, and yes, Lance Bass was Sephiroth.
If you ever needed confirmation about Sephiroth, folks.
Bye, bye, bye.
Bye, bye.
No, what about that NSYNC reunion?
Oh, you mean, Justin Timberlake promotion?
So, you know, Kingdom Hearts, really great game. It's super, super, super important to me.
And coming up next on NSYNC Cast from the podcast Pirates, we'll be talking about J.C. Chazé's, amazing solo efforts.
I could talk about J.C. Chazé all day. And dream about sex. But I'm not going to. That was an actual reference to his record, by the way.
I know.
But no. Kingdom Hearts. I think probably the most iconic thing about this game is probably the Keyblade. You're familiar with the Keyblade? Giant
key? It is a key that is a blade, and you whack stuff with it. Heartless.
Okay, yeah. So the Keyblade is a giant key. Use it as a weapon. Something a lot of people don't realize about this game is when Hashimoto-san and Nomura-san and Sakaguchi-san were working on this game, initially they sort of pictured Sora wielding a magical chainsaw. Which certainly is a very different kind of visual, I dare suggest. So...
I choose to believe that the key was a reference to the keys that you get in the Adventures of the Magic Kingdom for NES, the Capcom gem that we talked about last week on Disney. Disney!
No, nobody likes that game. It's awful. Stop. Have you stopped? Good. So Sora is a 14-year-old boy. He lives on this home world.
It's
like an island. It has a beach and stuff. He has some friends. He like
pretty
super
simple,
cares about.
Really clean.
Girl. They're all super emo. They have like all kinds of childhood adventures and they're super
close.
Some
of them voiced by Hilary Duff.
Maybe.
I hope so.
I don't know who that is.
It's Lizzie McGuire. Are you serious?
I don't know what that is. What? Who is that?
Anyway, so.
You're super rude. In his dreams, his world is attacked by these really dark, sinister creatures known as the Heartless, and he is...
No, Hilary Duff was a Disney starlet, like, pre-Hannah Montana. Get with the program.
I don't think Disney was a thing before Hannah Montana.
Anyway, Kingdom Hearts!
Yeah, so, in his dreams, Sora finds a powerful and ancient weapon that, sort of... is shaped like a giant freaking key. And he sort of has to traverse now other worlds, mostly worlds from the Disney canon, and sort of reconnect the worlds, open hidden keyholes in each world to free hearts there. And there's also like this whole subplot about like the Disney princesses who here are referred to as the Princesses of Heart. And you sort of have to save them all, Ariel and Sally maybe had one. I don't know. She's not a Disney princess, but
she should be.
It was, anyway, you know, it's a really cool game.
No, you know what? Sally's a Disney queen because she's married to the Pumpkin King, even though they never really said they were married. I choose to believe it's canon.
Are you basically writing Nightmare Before Christmas fan fiction right now?
Well, I've got to do something while you're writing your Organization 13 fanfic.
I hate everything.
So I actually have to say that... Oh, keep going.
What do you have to say?
I was going
to
say, I need to clarify that I actually did rent Kingdom Hearts shortly after it came out.
Oh, good, good. And so you do have a little experience.
Yeah, so I do have experience. I know, like, what the gameplay is like and everything. I never had a chance to, at the time, I was still in high school. I feel super old now.
Oh, gosh, yeah, huh.
And so, you know, I didn't have, like, a steady flow of cash to be like, oh, I'm going to go pick up this game. And it just never really got around to it. So that's kind of why I haven't.
Excellent. All right.
And the funny thing is that you're like, oh, it's, like, too complex. And I think that's honestly probably what kept me like, oh, I haven't to play the first one, so I'm not going to pick up Dream Drop Distance, blah, 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 blah. But anyway, sorry, keep going.
No, actually, I think that's a super valid point. I think that for a lot of people, that is the barrier of entry, is I missed the first one, and everyone talks about how it's so complex. So, you know, I guess that series is just not for me. It's too late to jump in. And that's exactly why I want to talk about this series just before the HD remaster comes out, so that...
HD remix?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an HD remaster. Let's be real.
But it's not the HD remix. It's the HD remix.
I hate you. Yeah, I mean... Yeah. Why don't you tell our listeners about what worlds are in this game?
So, one of the ones I remember... specifically is Wonderland. I think that was... Is that the first one, or is it, like, you can kind of choose?
To some degree, you can choose what level you're doing first. But
I remember doing Wonderland first.
I think Wonderland is one of the ones that most people does first. It's like that, or, like, the deep jungle from Tarzan, I think,
which
are the
I remember,
that most people do
didn't
first.
That have, like, a really cool, like, tree surfing?
I wouldn't call it really cool, but it did have tree surfing.
Yeah. Well, it was really cool in the movie.
Anyway, continue. Talk about Disney Worlds.
I remember... You're
looking at a list.
I remember the Wonderland one being, like, platformy, kind of. There was Monstro the Whale from Pinocchio, which
Wonderland.
I didn't really like that one as much. 100-Acre Wood from Winnie the Pooh, Atlantica from Atlantis.
Well, no, it's actually...
Oh, no,
from
Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Triton is there. You know, shirtless.
With his sexy mermaid man pecs. Olympus Coliseum from Hercules! Halloween Town from Nightmare Before Christmas, which I'll be writing fanfic on later, and look forward to it at GameBuie.org. Deep Jungle from Tarzan. Neverland from Peter Pan, and Agrabah from Aladdin, of course. I remember the Agrabah, from what I played... I actually played most of these levels, actually, so I guess I got pretty far looking at this list. I remember the Agrabah one being, like, really well done. Like, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, that Agrabah area is one that has been reused in several games, and I think Kingdom Hearts fans now are probably a little bit tired of it, but in just within the context of that first game, I thought it was really tremendously well put together.
I agree, yeah.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been a few years since I played Kingdom Hearts 1. Do you go down into the Cave of Wonders?
Yeah.
Excellent. I didn't...
Oh, with HD Remix coming out, oh, I can't wait to play the Cave of Wonders!
Yeah, that's gonna be really great. I remember
so
doing Cave of Wonders stuff in maybe Recoded or 358 Days Over 2. And just being like, oh man, Cave of Wonders is awesome. So I'm stoked. I'm really excited to replay
Cave of Wonders is always awesome.
You know, so we talked a lot already about how this is a Square Enix Disney collaboration. Sora's going around to various Disney worlds and sort of saving the princesses there. And, you know, it's all very sort of third-person action RPG game. In fact, that's something that not so much in this first game, but in later games, this series actually gets very experimental in terms of RPG mechanics and leveling.
I always thought, like, my first impressions of it, because I was, you know, really big into Squaresoft at that time, in that late 90s, early 2000s era, and I mean, the first impression I got was Vagrant Story, definitely.
Yeah, I wouldn't exactly go there with you. But, you know, there is a whole element of, like, getting new abilities and equipping them and stuff. So, I mean, there's some cool stuff going on in that first game. Definitely.
You can have summons, like...
Yeah, there were the summons. Things like Simba and, you know, I think Dumbo, maybe.
I think Dumbo was one.
I was never really super into the summons. I felt like they were a little game-breakery, and Kingdom Hearts, unfortunately, is super easy, so I didn't really want
to... Is it spoilery to talk about who your two main party members are?
No, I think that's perfectly fair, and I was going to get to it. If you want to right now, go for it, dude.
So, one of the... Well, I guess I can't really speak to it because I haven't played the other ones, but I get the impression that one of the important parts of the mainline series is the friendship between Sora, Donald, and Goofy. Unless, like...
Yeah, well, they're...
Unless, like, Goofy dies.
They are definitely comrades in arms. They definitely...
Why, Dolan?
They definitely adventure together for multiple Kingdom Hearts games. And their friendship of sort of those three, and then the friendship of the three characters, you know, Sora and his two friends, Riku and Kairi, whom he grew up with. These are sort of like the two main triangles of characters throughout the first game, certainly. And you know, more or less through the second and the rest of the series. Something that I really like about this game is that there is, like, sort of this whole recurring theme and leitmotif of sort of characters in groups of threes. And I really like that the game sort of uses your... The game series and narrative uses your expectation of characters to be grouped in threes to sort of say different things about different types of character dynamics.
Yeah.
Which is a little more... Which is probably a little more insight than the series deserves, but I love it. I don't care. Anyway, just to get this show back on the road, you know, like I was saying, we've talked a lot about Disney characters and Disney worlds. Something we haven't really talked about is what the Square Enix part of this collaboration brings into effect. And that is that this game has, you know, a lot of Square Enix, or Squaresoft at the time, but, you know, Square Enix for easy reference. It has a lot of Square Enix characters represented as well. Slykick, maybe you could tell our listeners about the Square Enix characters that show up in this game.
Yeah, because the first set was really weird, and I still don't understand. Because before the something-something happens that gets you into the world of the Heartless and everything, on your island home, there
Yeah, I mean, you could just say the Heartless Attack. I mean... I think that's fair. Back of the box quote.
On the island home, there are child versions of Tidus and Waka from Final Fantasy X, but also Selphie from Final Fantasy VIII. Like,
is this Selphie? Like, is she constantly snapping pictures to send people on Facebook?
How dare you? Selphie is awesome.
What? I love selfies. I take selfies every day. I literally just took a selfie like 10 minutes ago.
I'm going to whip you with, like, that chain thing that she uses.
Ooh, girl, you don't get to whip me. Sorry about it.
Ew!
But okay, so we have Tidus, Waka, and Selphie. Who else do we got?
Squall, Yuffie, and Eris. So there's also Cloud and Asheroth.
What?
I mean Sephiroth.
Did you just call him Asheroth?
Asheroth is way cooler than Sephiroth. Cry about it.
That whole song would be way different. It's like, da-da-da-da, Asheroth.
I love college.
Anyway.
And also, Sid Highwind, who for some reason is wearing a barrel and sells you parts for his gummy ship and does not swear, which is really weird.
Okay, but just to be clear here, Sid in a barrel, that sounds kind of alright by me, if you catch my drift.
No, yeah, me too, but... you know, Sid Highwind was, like, probably the one part of Final Fantasy VII that I loved. Because he's, like, you know, a chain-smoking, gruff, older dude who swears a lot. I mean, hell yeah. Also, like, a freaking astronaut. Oops, sorry, spoilers, but it's Final Fantasy VII. Cry about it.
Yeah, we're spoiler-free for the Kingdom Hearts series. No love for Final Fantasy VII. Sorry.
So anyway, Sid doesn't swear, and that sucks.
Yeah,
it fucking sucks a lot, goddammit.
Wow.
Hey, I barely swore last time. I gotta make up for it.
All right, well, I guess you ain't gotta say that twice. Moving forward here, let's talk about the next
Damn
game
Damn right
on
I
list.
Don't.
Hey, we're already like 20 minutes in, so.
Oh dear, so.
We need to step this up. Let's stop being so off track. Let's get real focused now.
So you, I want to hear you talk about Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories for the Game Boy Advance, which came out in late 2004, and one of them came around...
The North American version actually released on my birthday that year. This was very exciting for me.
That was like the party I got super drunk at.
Probably. So, Chain of Memories is a game that I have a lot of feels and memories about. Not just because it came out on my birthday, although certainly it doesn't hurt. But it was sort of a continuation, sort of. It was absolutely a direct continuation of the first Kingdom Hearts game. The story centers around Sora exploring a mysterious castle in search of Donald and Goofy. And as he ascends the castle, his friend and rival Riku, whom we mentioned in our previous discussion of the first game, explores the basement levels and goes deeper and further down. The important thing about this game in terms of the lore of the entire series is that this is the game, that sets up the Organization 13, which Slykick had referenced previously in this episode, but didn't really have any place in, the first Kingdom Hearts game. This is sort of, without getting, again, into spoilers, this is sort of the, rival organization to our heroes.
And is the 13 a reference to, like, Disneyland's address being 1313, which, when you turn it on its side, it looks like Mickey Mouse ears? That's seriously why the address is 1313.
I had no idea that that was a thing. I guess it could be. I have always taken it as more of a Final Fantasy 13 thing, even though I guess really,
this was way before 13.
It was before 13, but not so far before that they wouldn't have known that 13 was coming down the line. You have to remember, we're talking about Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories, not Kingdom Hearts 1. In 2004, I think they probably already knew that 13 was a thing. And you know how Nomura is. He's Nomura.
Was it part of the Fabulous Novella Crystallis?
Well, that's what I mean. I feel like that announcement happened around the same time as Organization 13 being a thing.
Oh.
So... I would really have to look, and I'm speculating off the top of my head right now.
So, were people, like, QQ about the fact that this was a GBA game?
You know, they were. That is where the platform switchery QQ first started. Because Square Enix, when they announced this game, they told people, like, oh yeah, this is absolutely an integral part of the Kingdom Hearts storyline. If you don't play this game, you're not going to have any idea what's going on in the first 4 hours of Kingdom Hearts 2. And I don't think it's a spoiler to say that, but Kingdom Hearts 2 has a very non-traditional opening. And we'll talk about that in just a couple of minutes, because we're not going to stick around on Chain of Memories for too long. Chain of Memories is notable, rather than being a 3D third-person action RPG, it is a card game.
Is it a mobile social card game? That's Kingdom Hearts Key.
Yeah, well, yeah, that wasn't really quite a thing in the context that it is now, but it was sort of a cool 2D action game, except all of your attacks and abilities were assigned to to cards. And as you'd use the cards, you'd have to reshuffle, so you could only attack a set number of times before you had to reshuffle your deck. And each card had, like, a weakness to another card, just based on the way numbers worked, like, oh, I'm playing an 8, so... if I'm attacking an enemy who's defending with, like, a 7 or below, I'm going to be effective. But if it has, like, a 9 or a 10 in its defense, it's going to counterattack.
Was it, like, Magic the Gathering?
No. It was not.
So Wicked from Nerdgasm Network probably wouldn't be interested.
I'd be shocked if he hadn't played this game. But, and then, there was another element where you would take your cards and also use them to generate levels. So you would be in, like, a card world version of the worlds from Kingdom Hearts 1. So you're in Wonderland or Agrabah.
Wonderland is always a card world.
I hate you so
much. Painting the roses red.
I follow what you're saying, but you're being really distracting.
This is why I want to do a Disney cast. Shut up.
I hate you. And it's like you're playing you play a card in order to generate the next room, and it's almost procedurally generated in that context of there's not like a set floor plan. and you're sort of choosing what room pops up where and how to explore. And, you know, are you going to explore? Are you just going to play your cards to get straight to the ending? Or are you going to explore and find all of the hidden power-ups and treasures and you know, bonus cards? So it's a really cool game. It's very different. And a lot of people were very thrown off by it being a Game Boy Advance exclusive, as you had pointed out. Especially when Square Enix had said this game was going to be super important in the long haul. And it was, certainly. Something else really interesting that happened about this game is that when the final mix re-release of Kingdom Hearts 2 happened some number of years later, it came with a bonus disc that was called Re-Chain of Memories, and this is where the re-meme first came from, as I remember it anyway. And Re-Chain of Memories is like a 3D remake of the game. It still uses this same cool card combat system. It still uses the same card map-generating mechanic. But it's just in 3D and has voiced cutscenes and stuff. So it's, you know, it's actually pretty cool. And that is also one of the games that, as a full game, Re-Chain of Memories is included in Kingdom Hearts HD Remix 1.5, which comes out in a week and a half from the time of this recording.
So would you say that this is the definitive version to play as Re-Chain of Memories just because it looks super pretty?
I would. I don't see a lot of reason to go back to Chain of Memories on Advance outside of being sort of historically noteworthy and also having a full motion video. It's a Game Boy Advance game with straight up full motion video. There were, of course, you know, a few of these in over time. Some of the Dragon Ball Z games I seem to recall having some FMV toward the end there. But yeah, it's really fascinating. I'm a big fan of, again, the fact that Square Enix has used the Kingdom Hearts space to experiment with sort of different gameplay ideas, because, you know, that's something that I certainly personally am very fond of.
And especially with Final Fantasy XV getting all the Kingdom Hearts comparisons. So
oh, yeah, definitely. And the last real thing I want to draw attention to here is that Chain of Memories and Re-Chain of Memories have a special mode that unlocks after you beat the game the first time called Reverse Rebirth. Which, of course, that's sort of a homophone when you're pronouncing it in Japanese, because, you know, Rivasu Reversu.
Oh, clever.
But I don't want to talk anything about that mode. I've already said enough that you could probably intuit sort of what it is. But on the off chance, I haven't. Spoilers. So please look forward to it.
Shh, spoilers.
Exactly so. Please look forward to it. You know, play it when it comes out in HD. Great game that I definitely don't think gets the attention and respect it deserves. If you want to talk about a game that gets a lot of attention and respect, Slagkick, why don't you give me the release info on this one?
Kingdom Hearts 2, which came out at the end of 2005 for the PS2, and right early in the spring of 2006 for...
So it was late PS2. 2005 for Japan, and early 2006 for North America?
Yeah, now was that after PS3 had launched? Right after?
It very well may have been. It was definitely a late-era game. I don't know that it definitely was, but it may have been.
Anyway.
So Kingdom Hearts 2 is sort of notorious for quite a few reasons. One, of course, I say notorious, but also notable and noteworthy. You know, there is one of the more notorious things is that the first 3 or 4 hours of the game, with basically no indication of who, what, when, where, or why, has you controlling a completely different kid from Sora. Of course, Sora was in all the promotional artwork, and this was quite a shock to people, you know, in 2005, 2006 when they first played this game. You know, you pop in this game and it's like, oh, I'm gonna play as Sora, I'm gonna hang out with my Disney friends, we're gonna have some adventures in Disney. And instead, no, you're this kid, you're named Roxas, you look kind of similar to Sora, but mostly your life is about hanging out in some town and being poor with a bunch of other poor kids and having a bunch of ennui about summer almost being over.
Is winter coming?
No, although, I suppose, you could probably make an argument. And, you know, it's a very nostalgic feeling. It's very, like, forlorn child, kid, you know, like, sort of evoking back to sort of memories of, yeah, as a child, when summer is ending and, you know, you're looking for toward the end. That's what the first 4 hours of Kingdom Hearts are about, basically, is looking forward to the end. And eventually you get to a part where things happen in the plot, and Sora and his companions, Donald and Goofy, are brought back into play after having been asleep for about a year. They have amnesia to some degree, sort of they don't remember everything that happened. And he eventually meets up with the town that this mysterious boy Roxas was in. And sort of one of the threads running throughout the game is sort of discovering the connection between Roxas and Sora, which again is done in almost like a Twin Peaks-y style way of being, especially just through the context of Kingdom Hearts 2, not very clear. It is not super well defined in and of itself in that game. One thing that's very interesting, you know, is that a lot of people who are very confused about who the heck is Roxas are people who had skipped Chain of Memories and assumed that that was explained in Chain of Memories, when in fact who Roxas was not explained in Chain of Memories.
I see.
So that's where a lot of that confusion comes from, and I think that might be one of the main points of confusion, is the Sora slash Roxas connection.
Sora Roxas slash?
That is definitely not what I meant there. You know, there's also a mysterious figure from Organization 13 named Axel, who is a friend of Roxas and an antagonist to Sora.
Can you find him in the deep jungle? Does he have fun in games?
No, but you could find him in Mega Man X8.
But you find him in Paradise City?
Girl, well played. Why don't you take us through this list of Disney worlds?
So you can visit the Land of Dragons from Mulan, Port Royal from Pirates of the Caribbean.
And the thing about Port Royal is that this game, the graphics in that area...
Port Latrice Royale!
The graphics in that area were so freaking good that people thought when screenshots of it were first announced, or, you know, given to the press or what have you, people thought they were bull shots. Like, people thought that these graphics could definitely not exist on PlayStation 2.
And they did!
No, they quite
well,
did.
I mean, it's Square, you know. Were they Square Enix at this point?
I think for two, yeah, death.
But, I mean, you know, it's Square Enix, they're always going to push the limits of whatever console they're on.
And, you know, as a notable point of change that happened in localization, I just want to point out that in the Japanese release, in this section when you're fighting the pirates and their zombies, in the Japanese release, if you cast Fyra or Firega or, you know, Fire or whatever, they will set a fire and be, like, walking around on fire as they take heck of damage.
Oh, snap!
In the North American version, they do take increased damage because they are undead type, and, you know, undead in Final Fantasy games takes extra damage from fire.
Can you throw a phoenix down on them and they die?
Unfortunately not. This isn't Mystic Quest. Aww. But they do not set on fire. They do not get set on fire, and they do not walk
violent
around a flame. There's also a character who has a weapon that looks like a gun that in the... North American release, this is changed to look more like a laser pistol of some kind.
Oh.
So that's, you know, that's also very notable. But I'm sorry, continue. After Port Royal, what is there?
Space Paranoids from Tron.
Oh, that's awesome.
And this was before Tron Legacy, so...
Yes, it was. In fact,
pretty notable.
I remember people being very hyped about Space Paranoids before Kingdom Hearts 2 came out. That was like a big deal to a lot of people.
Yeah. You can visit Beast's Castle from Beauty and the Beast. And returning from the previous game, our 100 Acre Wood, Agrabah, and Olympus Coliseum, as well as Halloween Town, but there was also Christmas Town.
Well, something notable in the Olympus Coliseum is that you get to go down to the underworld as well.
Oh, snap.
And, you know, I didn't include this in...
Did James Wood do the voice of Hades for this?
I think he did, actually.
So he reprised his voice? Because I know that, like, with a couple things, like, they're like, oh, we're going to have to get, like, the TV actor for...
Yeah. I think they got James Woods legit to do it. Something else notable that happens in Underworld, and I didn't think about this when I was writing these show notes, so it's not included in the Squeenix cameos, but while you're down there, you meet with Auron from Final Fantasy X, and he temporarily joins your party.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. It is so bad, it's
basically
awesome.
Like the coolest part of Final Fantasy X.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, continue.
And then in Halloween Town, there's also Christmas Town.
Yeah,
There's the Pride Lands from Lion King.
And when you go there, Sora becomes like a furry version of Sora. He's like a cute little lion with like a keyblade in his mouth, and he like meows as he attacks. And
cute.
Yeah, it's actually really adorable.
And then there's the Timeless River, which... So the Timeless River from Steamboat Willie was also a level.
Yeah, and the cool thing about that, again, you know, something that I didn't really talk about... the Port Royal world is, super realistic. The graphics are, like, super, people are sort of in that uncanny valley, like, looking really legit, like modeled after their human actors. The Tron level looks super like Tron. It does all sorts of cool lighting things to sort of give it that sort of Tron effect. Pride Lands, you know, as I mentioned, Sora becomes, like, a cute little lion Sora. And the really cool thing they did with Endless River... Timeless River, is that, so the whole game becomes black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Sora's whole character design changes so that
he has, like, cute little vintage Mickey eyes?
Yes, exactly that.
Oh.
And even all of the sound effects that you make, like, all of your, like, ha, 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 all come out, like, super tinny, like they're coming out of a cup, so they're all like, ha, ha, ha! Like, it's really just an incredible effect. It's super...
Well, I find, like, that lots of levels based on Steamboat Willie in games are just, like, really special. We were talking about Mickey Mania,
did a similar thing. But yeah. I had to point out that all of these worlds are just super well-designed to the styles of their source material.
I remember seeing, like, screens of it, you know, I've watched you play a little bit of it before, and I think it was really a precedent for Epic Mickey kind of being in that old-timey sort of feel.
Why don't you take us home real quick with a list of the Square Enix cameos?
Oh, there was also
the
Disney Castle.
Oh, hooray. Let's go down the list real quick of Square Enix cast cameos, and then we need to get the show on the road. We're running long already. Which game movie?
Well, we've already covered the two main entries in the game, so the rest will go quick. So there's Vivi from Final Fantasy IX, Setzer, who's badass from Final Fantasy VI, Cypher Raiden in Fujin from Final Fantasy VIII. Rage! There's Selphie. I don't know if she is still a little kid or if she, like, normal now.
I think she's young. No, actually, she's still a kid.
Oh, that's weird.
Go on, though.
Leon.
Squall.
And Cid, Aerith, Yuna, Riku, Payne.
YRP in position! They're super cute because... They appear as, like, little, like, fairy witches YRP.
Like the fairies from Sleeping Beauty?
Yes, actually, similar to that.
Oh, my goodness.
Tifa.
Tifa, Cloud, Sephiroth.
And Yuffie.
So some returning faces and some new ones.
And it's worth mentioning a lot of the all-star voice cast, you know, Lance Bass, David Boreanaz. They did not come back for this second game. Although this game certainly has a much higher set of production values than the first game.
I do think Kim Possible came back to voice Yuffie, if I remember that, though.
Call me, beat me, if you want to reach me.
Because, you know, at that point, what else was she doing? I think Kim Possible was done by then.
Next game, chronologically, and this is going to sound a little out of whack to our American listeners, of which certainly we would have to count ourselves among, but in November of 2008, for Docomo... mobile phones, a new project, an episodic Kingdom Hearts series was launched for the mobile platform called Kingdom Hearts Coded.
That's back when they were doing a lot of mobile games, like the one about what were they from 7? The cool ones? The Turks.
The Turks, yeah.
Yeah.
You're thinking of Before Crisis.
Yes.
So... This game was announced at the same time as Kingdom Hearts 358 Days Over 2 for Nintendo DS and Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep for PlayStation Portable. They were all announced as 3, and this was the first time
The series of 3 that is a theme in Kingdom Hearts?
So, and this was the first time that Nomura said his sort of now famous among the Kingdom Hearts community, sort of his guideline that, he'd like to see a new Kingdom Hearts game hit every year. That, as far as he's concerned, it would be ideal for every calendar year to have one new Kingdom Hearts release. And this is more or less something that they have adhered to. But, so this game came out, it was episodic, it sort of, takes place immediately after Kingdom Hearts 2. Kingdom Hearts 2 ends with sort of one of the elements of it, and this is not really a spoiler, is a letter that gets unread, that goes unread, I should say. And this game, Coded, is all about that letter, the contents of which link very strongly to Birth by Sleep. And funny enough, because of this connection, the last episode of this game actually didn't hit for several years, because it is intricately, very tightly connected to, sort of the ending of Birth by Sleep. And this, to me, this is actually the most complex part of all of Kingdom Hearts lore, is just that Coded, as it was originally released, is just tied very closely to Birth by Sleep and Kingdom Hearts 2. Birth by Sleep, and we'll get to this, but it was a prequel, so a lot of people thought it wouldn't be connected to current continuity or whatever, and through Coded, it is. This game was re-released and, you know, remade for the DS as a 3D game. The Docomo phone version was not in 3D. It was sprite-based, it was a little janky. And one thing that people did like was that while it had a very basic sort of trying to mimic Kingdom Hearts gameplay for most of the game, when you went to the Disney Worlds, which were again being revisited from Kingdom Hearts 1 in a style very similar to Chain of Memories, all of these worlds had very different play styles. So one was like a Space Harrier clone.
Oh, cute.
One was like an Endless Runner before Endless Runners were like a big, big thing. So it was actually really cool. A lot of people really liked it. And when they remade it for the DS, they sort of enhanced this idea. So it has like a whole 3D game world, but when you go into specific, like, boss encounters and stuff, that's where it takes these alternate gameplay styles and puts them in.
And that was the first chance that Western audiences had to play it.
Yeah, we did not get the Docomo phone version of...
because we don't have Docomo phones.
Yeah, of Coded. But, again, a lot of people view Coded and Recoded as sort of the weak link of the series and the one that you can skip.
The weakest link. Goodbye.
And if you had to skip a game in the series, that would probably be the
one. I don't
know.
That sounds like the most clever one of the series to me.
I think that it is, but again, I'm actually a tremendous fan of this series. One thing that's really cool, and I'm gonna move off this momentarily, but the Recoded version for DS has an upgraded stat system where, via leveling and getting stats, you sort of get tokens that you can equip or unequip to make levels harder or easier. With, of course, game levels that you play with fewer abilities equipped, you get greater rewards for getting through them. So there's like this whole like wagering difficulty mechanic that if, you know, you don't play on easy, you basically are not equipping all your stuff and you're staying a little weak so that the game remains challenging. It's also rewarding you more.
Well, that's right up your alley.
Yeah, no, it really is. And that's an interesting kind of mechanic that I find very compelling.
I'm surprised that that's not been explored more.
Well, you know, give it time. Recoded was just, you know, like 2 years ago.
Oh, Recoded is the one that did that. Okay.
Yes, Recoded. And that was, again, in North America just in 2011. In Japan it was 2010, but...
Oh, that was just before the birth of Game Buoy.
Yeah, maybe. Holy gosh. Wait, no, it wasn't. Game Buoy started in 2012. Wait.
No, I know. So just before. A year before.
Oh, a year is not just. moving forward, we have Kingdom Hearts 358 Days Over 2. This is, of course, how the Japanese pronounce it, and so one assumes that this is the official pronunciation of this name. More typically, you see people, or I should say hear people in the U.S. and North America. U.S. and North America. U.S. North America, because the U.S. is included in North America. Oh, man. It's late. I don't care. you know, they typically call it 358 over 2 days, when it's really 358 days over two. This is also, of course, what this episode of Game Buoy Micro is named after. And this game, now this is the interesting part here. This came out a couple of years after Kingdom Hearts 2. This game is the story of Roxas before Kingdom Hearts 2. And this game is just all about Roxas and Organization 13 and why Roxas is friends with Axel and why Axel is super, super mad at Sora all the time. These are the questions that are answered in Kingdom Hearts 358
really
Days Over
angsty.
2. It is probably one of the angstiest games I've ever played. It also has, I would say, one of the best endings I've ever seen in all of video games.
Did you cry?
I got the ending of this game while on public transit here in the Bay Area on, you know, BART, for those of you who are familiar with it. I was literally crying, like ugly tears streaming down your face. Like, you would have thought I had just listened to, like, an hour of, like, Fleetwood Mac on loop and was having heck of feels. Like, I ugly cried. It is super effective. It tells a great story. And I, this is actually a good time to mention this. As a game, this game, fails in a lot of ways. The controls are really bad. It's for the original DS, and Square Enix hadn't quite gotten their 3D engine running super good on it, so it's really ugly. It's cumbersome to play. And it has a tedious game mechanic where basically you're taking individual missions for, like, 358 days. And, you know, I mean, you get to skip some days, so it's not just straight up like, oh, doing the same thing 300 times, but you are doing the same thing for like 100 times. And most people got really bored of it and never made it to the end. The thing that is good about this, and the reason I bring it up in this context, is that this game is going to be included also in Kingdom Hearts 1.5 HD Remix, as a movie. So it's just like a 2.5 hour movie.
So you get to just enjoy the feels without the tedious gameplay mechanics?
Exactly.
Uh-oh, we got to go get some Ben and Jerry's.
Pretty much. Like, that's going to be me the day this game comes out. Like, I'm just going to sit down. I'm going to curl up in, like, a blanket.
In a Snuggie.
I'm going to get some ice cream.
Too bad you don't have the Kingdom Hearts Snuggie.
Oh, man, right? And I am just going to bawl. Like, I'm going to have all the feels, and I'm going to drown in a pool of emoji, and it's just going to be awful.
Oh, no.
The Disney worlds in this game, though, and, you know, there's a lot of returning ones here. You have Wonderland, you have Neverland, you have Olympus Coliseum, you have Beast's Castle, and you have Halloween Town. And the only Square Enix representation in this game is the Moogles. Again,
both.
I'm really excited for this game. Again, less as a game. It failed in a lot of ways. It also had an equipable abilities and levels mechanic similar to Recoded, but it doesn't really capitalize on them. Like, you can unequip levels, but why do you want to do that in this game? I don't know.
It's just too bad that they've never done a re-358 Days Over 2.
You know, well, I mean, that's kind of what they did for the HD Theater mode in HD 1.5 Remix. You know, get all of that delicious story without any of that tedious gameplay. Because in this instance, I don't know how they could have reconciled that game system. Because the narrative is really driven by sort of, again, Roxas's summer and approaching the end of summer. And the tedium of the game is part of the narrative. And sort of that tedium of, oh, it's summer, and my days are being wasted, and now we're reaching the end, and I've only learned now to appreciate them. And
so how would you say that this would affect newcomers who did not play Kingdom Hearts 2 before 358 Days
Over
2?
Well, 358 Days Over 2 didn't exist before Kingdom Hearts 2. So
no,
everyone who played Kingdom Hearts 2 had no idea what this
was about.
So no, but
I've seen people who haven't played either one, seeing this content in a HD 1.5 Remix before 2, do you think it's going to...
I see what you're saying.
Do you think people should wait for 2 before they watch it, or...
No, I would absolutely say watch this before you play 2.
Is the 2 from 358 Days Over 2 have to do with Kingdom Hearts 2?
It has to do with several different things. It's multifaceted.
Oh.
That is definitely one of the implied things, yes. There's another one, but it would get into spoiler territory, and I don't want to go there.
Okay.
But... absolutely, I think that this game absolutely contextualizes those problematic first 4 hours of Kingdom Hearts 2 that I was talking about that threw a lot of people off. I think that when people play 1.5 Remix and watch this movie version of 358 Days Over 2, I think it's really going to click for people why Roxas is such a compelling character, and I'm really excited for that to happen, because the way they set that story up, I actually really like. Of course, you know, we haven't really talked a lot about the story here. It gets a lot of negativity for being very shonen anime. And then, you know, that's true. There's a lot of the whole sort of Japanese metaphysical sort of element storytelling, superpowers that manifest themselves at the most opportune times, and you're my eternal rival! You're my best friend! We're across the world from each other, but I can feel your heart! And, you know, all of that sort of thing. So, I get it. It's hammy. It's a little cheesy. I do not think 358 Days Over 2 is terribly cheesy or hammy. I actually think it's really compelling storytelling in sort of the vein of some of the best of Square Enix's work of the last decade.
I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah, it's going to be a real
hoot. You just saved me a tub of Ben & Jerry's.
I will, girl. Just say the word. Like, we can make a little cry feels party over it.
Oh,
maybe
girl.
Maybe we could get some people from other podcast shows to, like, Skype in with us, and it'll be a thing.
Oh.
Be like, girl, pass the hankies. Like, oh, I can't. I'm halfway across the world from you. I'm like, oh, my God, we're like Sora, Riku, and Kairi.
So, let's wrap it up.
Yeah, we actually still have two games to talk about. So why don't you intro us to this next one? I'm going to sort of get my notes pared down here so we can cut through it real fast.
So the aforementioned Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep for the Sony PlayStation Portable, which was a 2010 release, January in Japan, September in North America. So pretty quick turnaround. Well, for a lot of these, actually, it's been pretty quick.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing about Kingdom Hearts is that if you look back at all of these date ranges from the other games, this one actually took the longest to come out here.
Yeah, you know, the meme is LOL, Square Enix takes 6 years to localize stuff. Well, that was back in the day.
Yeah, but in this case,
Final Fantasy XII.
In this case, it was 8 months, and 8 months was, like, extraordinarily long for this series.
Mm. And the one thing that I know is notable about, well, one of the notable things about Birth by Sleep is that it does not star the characters of the previous ones.
No, this game has a different set of three characters, Terra, Aqua, and Ventus.
Not the Terra that you're thinking of.
No, it is not a Terra that is connected to any other Terra that you know. And this game is a prequel set in sort of the distant past, and it's about three Keyblade wielders who are training to become Keyblade Masters under a character named Master Ericus. Ericus is, of course, Square, spelled backwards.
Ah, clever.
Much like Master Yen Sid from Fantasia, whom also appears in this series, is Master Disney spelled backwards.
Right. I was going to say, if you referenced him and did not mention that he was from Fantasia, I would shame you for not knowing your Disney lore.
Yeah, yeah. And so this game is sort of about them and sort of a rival teacher who thinks that he has a better way to teach them to become Keyblade Masters. This game sort of sets up the lore for the entire Kingdom Hearts series, which is why it's, you know, somewhat interesting that it didn't come along until 2010. It answers a lot of long-running stories and storylines and sort of questions that were asked earlier on but never answered. It sort of explains why certain characters can wield Keyblades and why some others can't. It goes into sort of what the meaning of Kingdom Hearts is, as well as contextualizes who Organization 13 is led by and why.
Oh my, sounds so very crucial.
It's Birth by Sleep is again, if Kingdom Hearts 1 and Kingdom Hearts 2 are considered the big games, Birth by Sleep should be considered just as big and looked at as like Kingdom Hearts 0. It has, of course, you know, these three playable characters we talked about, Terra, Aqua, and Ventus. All three basically function as their own separate Kingdom Hearts game. They have similar abilities between them, although they all play differently, slightly differently. And they're all, each have like a 10-hour scenario. So this game is as big or bigger than Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2. And, they all go to the different Disney worlds, which in this case are Disney Town, Castle of Dreams from Cinderella, the Mysterious Tower from Fantasia's The Sorcerer's Apprentice, the Dwarf Woodlands from Snow White, Enchanted Dominion from Sleeping Beauty, Deep Space from Lilo and Stitch, and, you know, returning favorites, Neverland, Olympus Coliseum, and 100 Acre Wood.
I noticed that this is the first one in a long time in the series that featured, like, worlds that had not been seen before.
Yeah, and, you know, in a cute twist to stick with sort of the whole origin idea and prequel setting, you'll notice that these are a lot of the original Disney animated films.
Oh, yeah, except for Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah, yeah, but, you know, you look at Cinderella and Fantasia and Snow White and Sleeping Beauty.
Peter Pan.
Peter Pan, absolutely. And so, yeah, it's really cool. It works on a lot of levels. This is a really incredible game. Obviously, once you beat the game with all three characters, a fourth scenario unlocks. And I would absolutely recommend playing this game. If you have a PSP, this is a must-play. If you do not have a PSP, but you're interested in this series, this is a game worth buying a PSP for.
Yeah, I think the PSP is actually worth it.
But we're going to get into... this is actually a good time to talk about this. Something that has been teased by Square Enix during the ending credits to HD 1.5 Remix, and I feel like this isn't a spoiler, but it shows HD clips from Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep, Kingdom Hearts 2, and some of the movie sequences from Recoded. So the running theory right now, and we've talked about this here on Game Buoy before, but the running theory is that we're going to see an HD Remix 2.5 that will have, again, Kingdom Hearts 2, Kingdom Hearts Recoded as a movie, and Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep. Because, again, the Kingdom Hearts series, Birth by Sleep is an absolutely integral part. You would be missing out a lot if you skipped that game. But fortunately, you wouldn't want to play it first, because all of these cool revelations would have no meaning without having played it.
That's interesting, because when this came out, I'm like, oh, well, this might be a good time, and I'll play it first. So I'm glad I didn't, actually.
Yeah, I think it would work, but it wouldn't be ideal. I really do think that it'd be probably best to play them in the order that they're being released HD remixes, in fact.
It would be like watching the Star Wars prequels before the original movies.
Yeah.
Not that I'd want to even do that.
Right.
Watch the prequels, that is.
And, you know, there's also a notable Square Enix cameo in this game, and that is, of course, Zack Fair from Final Fantasy VII.
Hey, more like Zack Fine.
Right? I like Zack a lot.
Should have been the main character of Final Fantasy VII, just saying.
One of my favorite things about the Final Fantasy VII narrative, so I was stoked that he was included. And, you know, last, we have one more game to talk about here. Last, but certainly not least. Well done. we have Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance. And that is, of course, Kingdom Hearts 3D for short.
And this was in the era of Game Buoy. The Japanese release was right before her first episode. So Captain Spike was probably very much in the Dream Drop Distance buzz. And then it came out at the end of July. So very recent. And it was a 3DS game, Dream Drop Distance 3D. Clever. I wonder if they'll release a 2DS re-release called Dream Drop 2D.
You know, something really interesting about Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance is that to date, currently, this is the sort of most recent story in the game. I would say that this is a game, again, on the scale of Kingdom Hearts 1, 2, and Birth by Sleep.
Oh.
It's fairly large. It has two playable characters, Sora and Riku. It has a really strange mechanic by which you sort of, at arbitrary times, will be completely interrupted from what you're doing to character change.
Oh.
So there's sort of two storylines going on independent of each other.
Like mid-battle?
Yeah, you will switch mid-battle, and it'll be like, oh, you just went from a battle with a boss even, to, oh, this story scene where you're talking with characters from World Ends With You. Which, spoiler alert, the Square Enix cameos in this game are the cast of The World Ends With You, which also obviously was a huge deal since that game has a very, very fevered fan base. A lot of people wanted to see these characters again, you know, Neku Sakuraba, Joshua, Beat, Shiki, and Rhyme, and they all pop up, and they have, you know, great voice acting, some really incredible remixes of the music from that game. You know, something we haven't really talked about here in this episode at all is that the music in Kingdom Hearts is probably something that it is most well known for.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have been making Simple and Clean references, so... One of the things I also noticed about Dream Drop Distance is that it kind of continues the trend of, oh, let's throw in some new worlds. So I'm going to butcher this, but there's La Cité de Cloches.
Girl, we're just going to say that in English. That was supposed to be French for the City of Bells.
From Hunchback of Notre Dame.
The grid from Tron Legacy. Like, very specifically, this game tells the story of Tron Legacy in it.
Oh, girl. The Symphony of Sorcery from Fantasia. Prankster's Paradise from Pinocchio. Ooh, that was very alliterative. The Country of the Musketeers from The Three Musketeers, which I'm assuming is the Mickey Donald Goofy version of Three Musketeers.
It absolutely is.
Okay, good, because I was going to say, otherwise it's really random. Disney Castle and Mysterious Tower.
And, you know, again, I wanted to just touch base on that music. You know, the scores for these games were done by Yoko Shimomura,
who did the music for Adventures in the Magic Kingdom.
Did she?
She did.
Okay, credit to her. Yeah, she worked at Capcom. She did music for Street Fighter II. She did music for Square Enix, for Super Mario RPG, Parasite Eve, Legend of Mana.
Didn't she leave Square Enix for a while, or was doing freelance work or something? Or something?
I don't know that. I think she did do some freelance work, but she has worked because she had, like, maternity leave and stuff. But she came back in 2003, yeah, to do freelance work. She now works with Nintendo on the Mario and Luigi series, Kingdom Hearts. She's working on the scores for both Kingdom Hearts 3 and Final Fantasy 15 currently.
Oh, yes.
And she's really grown. You know, one of my favorite things about these scores is that you listen to the scores from Kingdom Hearts all the way through Dream Drop Distance, and her compositions have become so much more interesting. There are just some really incredible musical pieces on the soundtrack to Dream Drop Distance. You'll notice I haven't talked about the story of Dream Drop Distance yet, and that's because it would be about impossible to, without getting into some pretty deep spoiler territory. But needless to say, it is about sort of what happens immediately following Kingdom Hearts 2, and specifically, and Tetsuya Nomura has talked about this, it very specifically sets up what the conflict for Kingdom Hearts 3 is going to be. Which, again, that's why I can't talk about specifics. This is spoiler-free. This game is, of course, of a recent enough vintage that if you have a 3DS, and statistically speaking, if you're listening to Game Boy, you probably do, I would recommend you just go over to, you know, Best Buy or Amazon. You can probably get this game for like 20, 25 bucks at this point. And it is absolutely worth a playthrough. It is just a stupendous game, absolutely, you know, console quality, and just a real winner in my eyes, certainly. That having been said, we're nearing our end, Slackick. Tell me, what are your thoughts of the Kingdom Hearts series?
You know, my experience is only based on mostly observation and then the little bit that I've played. I think, you know, considering that the first game came out in 2002, you know, I mean, I think really it was really just something that we hadn't seen before. And I think it's really, all in a way, it's almost surprising, you know, thinking that the game would never come out. Because I remember, this was before I met you, but I remember I was like, oh, a Disney, like I was probably reading IGN or something. I feel a little ashamed of that, but, you know, like, oh, a Disney game with Square? That's really weird. Like, and then to think that it's just grown into this franchise that's lasted so long, you know, I think that's really a testament to how much love this franchise gets. And can we talk about Simple and Clean, finally?
Yeah, it's time.
Because I think the thing that's really cool is, of course, Simple and Clean, if you didn't know, is the theme song for Kingdom Hearts, as well as, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's also for Chain of Memories, Birth by Sleep, and Recoded in different iterations or whatever.
More or less, yes, you're correct.
Nomura-san actually approached Utada.
Utada Hikaru?
Yeah. And that he specifically wanted her. And so she wrote the song, and, you know, that's, and the rest is history. I mean, it's one of her most lasting singles, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, I want to talk real quick here. In the Japanese games, this is actually a completely different song, also by Utada, called Hikari, which of course means light, and the context of the song is completely different. It is an absolutely different song. The lyrics are completely different. They are not even about the same things. And Hikari very much is a game about the story. I'm sorry, a game is a song that it very much reflects the story of Kingdom Hearts. You know, Simple and Clean has become very anthemic. When I saw Utada live, the crowd lost their shit
We were crying.
And but Hikari, if you look at the lyrics, and of course they're in Japanese, so I guess you'd have to look at, you know, like a translation sheet or something, but it's very specifically about the themes the game is about. So,
and I seem to remember, just from what I remember listening to the both of them at the time, Hikari even has a few subtle differences, like melody-wise, and, you know, just because...
Yeah, that's absolutely correct, and, you know, that's something that really made me value this more than just a simple translation. It's not like she took the same audio track or whatever and just, oh, this is the English words to the same song. Like, no, it's a different song, and while I do think the Japanese version is more applicable to the game, given the game's content... it's really cool that they went above and beyond and really did it right that way. And made another great classic anthemic song.
Do you know which one came first? Did she write the English one first or the Japanese one?
I would have to guess the Japanese, but since she's truly bilingual and...
Yeah.
It could have gone either way. I certainly couldn't say. And, you know, slightly lesser known but still appreciated is that she played the same trick for Kingdom Hearts 2. Japanese release and the English release having one song called Sanctuary and the other called Passion.
Yeah.
And that is,
also
again...
Also good songs. Beautiful.
Yeah, just beautiful songs. Again, everything we just said about Hikari and Simple and Clean apply here. Not just a simple re-recording, but she really went the extra mile and made the song still work in this other language and changed the content and... again, just tremendous effort. The music in this series is incredible. I can't wait to experience it in the HD remix. You know, we talked here previously in Game Buoy about how they re-recorded some music to have, like, instrumental scores and, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be the first dip of the spoon into the Ben and Jerry's is when Simple and Clean comes on.
Oh, girl, like, I hear that song in the context of those games, and I start getting watery-eyed. Like, I start losing it. Like, I'm starting to lose my voice. So,
with that,
I think that about wraps it up.
Except there's a game that was announced this year, wasn't there?
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts 3.
And of course, we've been talking about that a lot on Game Buoy as we've learned more about it, you know.
We don't really know anything about it. It's going to be on Xbox One and PlayStation 4.
And we're going to hear more about it at Tokyo Game Show, so.
We will be hearing more about it at Tokyo Game Show. Please stay tuned and keep listening to us over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
As always, we live for your feedback. We want your iTunes subscriptions and ratings/reviews. We really like your Facebook likes. We fucking live for Twitter, let me tell you what. I meant take the rest of the solicitations.
You can tumble with us on Tumblr, plus one us on Google Plus, and email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
You can find all of these links over at our home base, gamebuoy.org.
gamebuoy.org.
And we'd like to shout out to a great little show. You know, they're just about 2.5 years old at this point. They're called Game Buoy.
We're a year and a half old, not 2.5 years old, but yes. You're right. Please listen to Game Buoy proper over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And with that, unless you have anything else to say, Slagkick.
GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. Keep thinking, keep gaming, and please look forward to additional content on our feed in the next day or two. We're going to be recording another full episode in the immediate future. Good night. Good luck.
All right, everyone. Let's mosey.
See you, Space Cat Girl.
I'm playing with Mike's testes. Sexy mermaid man pecs.
You need to pull your shit together, girl. I'm about to go over to Koopa Club, see if I could snipe someone from over there, be like, I need a new co-host. Sorry about it.
Ew!
I believe that this is probably going to be the best sound that we're going to get tonight. Why don't you talk in your mic at the volume at which you intend to record?
Gummy ships in the shape of penises. I just have to point out the disgusting note. The Timeless River from Steamboat Willie. I've got to do that over.
How amazing was that?
Yeah!
Say it once as it was.
Cleveland Steamboat Willie. You're nasty. You nasty! There should be a That's So Raven.
You said anyway. I assumed you had something to say.
No, I was waiting for you to...